Election 2016.
Hello, I'm Roger Watterson. We're pleased you could join us for this, the third in a series of 12 Manx Radio Election 2016 debates, each one a live programme featuring a particular constituency and its candidates. We'll discuss their policies, ideas and beliefs, and explore their political hopes and vision. The new constituency of Douglas Central falls under the spotlight today. And in the studio with me today for the third in our election debates are all six candidates for Douglas Central, three men and three women. They are businessman Kurt Buchholz, caterer Anne Corlett, advertising copywriter and author Richard Falk, finance officer Sarah Hackman, biometric scientist Michelle Inglis, and former MHK seeking re-election and financial analyst Chris Thomas. Well, we'll meet them all in a few minutes, but first, here's John Moss, and he's been taking a close look at the newly named constituency.
Douglas Central, with the rejigging of the constituencies, has appeared, as if by magic, a new one. This one. Douglas Central. This will be confusing for many who could be scratching their heads and spending long evenings in front of the old spluttering fire, wondering. Well, Central Douglas is central, and it's in Douglas. Good. More information. Well, right then, if you examine the outline, it resembles someone kicking out. It does. The front leg is thrust in a manly way, or possibly in a rather unseemly womanly way, along South Quay and out to include the Battery Pier and Douglas Head, including that repository of excellent broadcasting, both fair and accurate, Manx Radio. The back leg stretches back with the thigh through Hills Meadow, and the rest of the leg, the ankle and the foot, out pointing towards Cueg and just past it. The torso shows a solid figure covering on the eastern fringe up to Ridgeway Street, then onto Bucks Road, Woodburn Road, up across Bray Hill and partly along Ballinard Road. It then turns west across the conurbations bordering Portishead Avenue, a quick trip across the river into Portishead Meadows before joining the main road just short of Braddon Bridge, and then heading back through Quarterbridge and back along the Peel Road. All that area surrounds Douglas Central, so included under the aegis of the two members who'll be voted in will be the Ports area and much of the housing of Inner Upper Douglas, a population estimated at something under 7,500. Well, what are the issues? Well, housing, obviously, perhaps the cost of private sector accommodation, parking, perhaps of all the things that get people hot under their collective collars, in this area is the ability to park both outside their homes safely and to park outside or near to their places of work. Should we pay for short-term parking down in the town instead of just hoisting a disc? But as this area is also home to a good number of mature residents, perhaps the over-75 TV licence will be something that makes them really mad. Security. Bobby's on the beat. Are there enough to make residents feel secure? So there we have it. Two MHKs who will be making history in a newly named constituency. Let's hear from those who fancy their chances.
That was John Moss, today rounding about the new constituency of Douglas Central. Now to our studio guests. At the start of each of these constituency programmes, we turn to our guests in alphabetical order to talk to us for 1.5 minutes, uninterrupted, on any topic of their choice. If they run over that allotted time, I'll stop them and we'll move on to the next. So, let's kick off now with Kurt Buchholz.
Yes, thank you, Roger. Douglas Central, we have six candidates, three women and three men. One is Manx, there are five foreigners, four English and one German, that's me. I'm 62 years old, I'm living here for 18 years on the Isle of Man. I'm married to Amanda, born Custane, from the mother's side is Clegg. These are two old Manx families. My daughter, or our daughter, Millie, is 6 years old and goes to school Jubilee, which is also in Douglas Central. When I talk to people, there are always three words: vision, work, and people. And this is what you will hear during the program from me as well. A little bit about myself, my education. I studied economy and maritime trade in Hamburg, and I made my captain's license there as well. My business experience is 30 years of senior management experience in international business. In my role as a CEO or director, I learned taking responsibility, making decisions. I'm familiar with complex commercial contracts, international law, finance, marketing, and managing people. My skills are efficient, I work efficient, I'm focused, open-minded, fast-thinking, listening to others. I have leadership skills, I can motivate people and leading by example. What we need in the new government is such experience and competence which will help us on the way into a better future. There will be no old boys club anymore. I might not be Manx, but my heart is here.
Right, that was Kurt Buchholz. Thank you. Now to Anne Corlett.
Thank you, Roger. I'm Anne Corlett. I'm 56 years old and I live with my family in Cronkbourne Road. I was born in and still live in Douglas Central. I'm a caterer and I've run my own business for the past 30 years. Small businesses like ours are of great benefit to the Manx economy, still here when many bigger enterprises have up and gone. Being lean and efficient, planning for the future, good financial management, good customer service, these are skills required to be successful in business. And I believe these same skills are required within government. Being self-employed makes you acutely aware of every penny spent. Any waste is your loss, and it hits you where it hurts, in your pocket. This is also the reality with public money. We need to spend wisely, reduce waste and needless spending. Government departments need to be more prudent in their financial management. I'm currently serving on Douglas Borough Council as a representative for St George's Ward. The experience has fueled my desire to enter national politics. I'm disappointed with the progress made by the previous administration and I feel it's time to put my money where my mouth is. I'm proud of my Manx roots and I can remember a time when we were, by far, worse off than we are now. There are difficult times ahead. We've had them before and with a sensible approach, we'll get through them again. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Anne Corlett. Now the third to speak is Richard Falk.
Thank you, Roger. The Isle of Man is potentially 4 years from bankruptcy. In the present financial year, the government will take £117 million out of reserves to cover the deficit in its revenue and capital spending. It has now had 7 years to adjust to the renegotiation of the VAT agreement and the loss of up to £200 million in income, and it has signally failed to do so. The present situation is straightforwardly unsustainable. What is deeply worrying is that government is continuing its spendthrift ways. In April, the Infrastructure Minister allocated £474,000 to repairing the Slock Road, with the astonishing comment that we had some spare money and we needed to spend it on something. We do not have any spare money and we do not need to spend it on anything. What we need to do is provide the basics properly, that is proper healthcare, proper social care. We do not need any more grandiose projects such as a complete remodelling of the promenade. One of the biggest threats to us is the public sector pension scheme, the liability on which now exceeds £3 billion, continues to rise significantly. By 21 to 22, the cost of the scheme to the taxpayer will reach about £100 million a year. That is completely unsustainable. We must start reining in spending, we must get inward investment, and we must start balancing our books as a matter of urgency.
Thank you. Richard Falk. Now, Sarah Hackman, please.
My name is Sarah Hackman. I have served as a Douglas councillor for the last 8 years, including being mayor last year. I have decided to now stand as MHK for Douglas Central in the upcoming election in September. In the long term, I believe the Isle of Man has the potential to enjoy strong economic growth, but to achieve that goal, the next 5 years are going to be difficult and will demand strong leadership from both men and women in the House of Keys, who are not afraid to make difficult decisions. I am one such woman, fully prepared to face stark realities. Those elected will need to start as they mean to go on, determined to tackle immediately the issues facing the island right now. For example, the prom and the road repairs, affordable housing, reinstate the TV licence payment for the over 75s and a sustainable pension scheme, to mention just a few. In the words of Abraham Lincoln, elections belong to the people. It's their decision. If they decide to turn their back on the fire and burn their behinds, then they will just have to sit on their blisters. So please use your vote to make a positive contribution to the future of the Isle of Man and vote Sarah Hackman on September the 22nd.
Right, that was Sarah Hackman. Michelle Inglis now, please.
Hi, my name is Michelle Inglis. I am 50 years old, a mother to four and grandmother to two. I've lived in Douglas Central for almost 13 years. By profession, I am a chartered biomedical scientist, working both in the UK and in the Isle of Man. As part of this role, I was the lead training officer within the department. My reasons for standing for an MHK are quite simple. I want to make a difference. I want to give our children every opportunity to fulfil their dreams and aspirations, and to ensure we have a new, open, honest and accountable government. Some of the policies I would like to bring forward include the regulation of all government departments, including Tynwald, to ensure openness, accountability and, above all else, the best service for our residents. The introduction of academic apprenticeships, whereby our students will earn while they learn towards their degree, and means testing for first degrees and a loan system for second degrees for every career changer.
Right, that was Michelle Inglis. And now to Chris Thomas.
Thank you, Roger. Who you elect matters, but the policies that person will try to conserve or change matter too. The new government needs to form around policy and with a clear mandate soon after this election. That is why I worked with others to make government's big debate more inclusive and less directed with the Isle of Man 2020 meetings. Now, this election, we have an opportunity to revisit government priorities, and each needs changing. From grow the economy to grow more usefully, putting more money in people's back pockets and making that money go further. From protect the vulnerable to enable everyone. And from balance the budget to rebalance the balancing of public finances. I hope we can talk about each of these later. My record speaks for itself. Government has acknowledged it needs a joined-up population policy. That was my initiative in Tynwald. How government raises and spends public revenue is in focus, as are pensions, housing and planning policies and arrangements. The economy needs turning around, but government is nowhere near bust. I have helped to unveil unvarnished truths. They're beginning to emerge. We are beginning to understand how proposed changes would affect us. So the right decision is made, not just any decision. Please spend one of your votes wisely on Chris Thomas. I might wear dark suits, but the lining is bright. It would be my privilege to represent you until 2021, as I have represented Douglas West since 2013. Thank you.
All right. Well, that's it. Thank you, Chris Thomas, and thanks for a look at your suit lining as well. Right. Ladies and gentlemen, now let's get into some subjects that, first of all, we'd like to hear what you think about them. I'm sure the people who are listening tonight will like to make an assessment as they're listening. After all, programmes like this, however unpleasant it sounds to put it this way, they're assessing just what you should are and what you should will be if you were elected. Now, Richard, just listening to you there now, I mean, around this table, you really are full of doom and gloom, aren't you? I mean,
I'm not as cheerful as John Moss, but no. I don't think many people are. I mean, I assume he's off his medication today, but I'm not really sure. I know Chris disagrees with me on this, the extent to which we are in trouble. I believe we are in serious trouble. We have a large underlying structural deficit. Now, to give it credit, the government has eliminated some of the deficit, but it's done so mainly by heaping charges upon what you might call middle Isle of Man, on working people. I'm struggling to see where we're going to make the remaining cuts. And I also think that their projections of growth are very optimistic. We desperately need action rather than words. We need inward investment. We need to diversify the economy. And we need to control capital spending. The slot road was a prime example of how certain government departments are out of control.
And I think the question we have to ask is that if we accept that, how would you influence it? What would
one
you bring
thing about? One thing I'd like to do, and Chris might have some input on this, the budgeting process. I think we have a budgeting process at the moment that regrettably encourages people to spend. If you don't spend your budget, you will be given less in future. We need to move away from that towards the budgeting process that encourages people to save. We've got to stop empire building by chief executives across a number of departments. We have got to stop the MHK mentality where people want landmark schemes bearing their name. And we've got to remember that if the cash reserve does run out, which I believe it could in a matter of years, we are bankrupt as a nation.
Do you go along with that, Kurt?
Partly. It's quite interesting. Anybody who comes from the finance sector is talking about figures from the past, because what has spent, how much we lost, and what is gone. And then it comes to the point where we have to look ahead and we have to see how do we change things. And this is then when the experience kicks in, of people who have experience. When I say I grow the business, coming from business, I know what I'm talking about. If somebody says we need this, we need that, we need to grow the economy, we need to control our spending, it is always the people in companies where I came from, where I worked, the operational side. You have three sides in each company: operational, administration, and finance. And the people who are in charge are always the operational people. So the finance people work with figures from the past, and the figures from the future they get from the operational side. We, like me, give the forecast how much money will we earn with something, with our business activities or the contracts that we have as an island or with the taxpayers. So this is how it is working. And it is very important that we do not point out what we need. We have to have somebody who knows what to do.
If you were elected, though, how would you make any change to that? I'm sure Chris will probably tell us after a while that there is a very strong embedded system. One person's not going to be able to make a lot of difference in that, is he?
You have 24 people, and all these 24 people will have to work together. So anybody who's elected must work with anybody else. And that is not an option, that is an absolutely requirement. And on the doorstep, people sometimes ask me the same question, and I always say the same. If there's a man on the doorstep, I said, have you played football when you were young? And most of them say yes. And I said, and one of your team was the captain. So it's always, when you have a group of people, one or two people become the driving factors in a team, or the driving elements, and you will see that in Tynwald. There are 24 people who have a very big ego, who think they are saving the world or the Isle of Man, but in fact, most of them are not suitable to do that.
Right. Now, Sarah, you're a finance officer. Does your work take you into this realm? What do you make of these comments so far?
I actually agree, in principle, with some of Richard's comments. The bit about the budgeting and the in finance, it is true. If you don't use your budget, then it gets reduced the following year. So that is something that we should be looking at. The budget should be there, but if they don't spend it, then it should go back into the pot and be used for something that is needed, rather than just used up just for the sake of using up. And I think we've been doing that far too much, especially over the last few years, that we've just been wasting money when we shouldn't be wasting the money.
Well, what would you do, Michelle? I mean, how would you make a change? Would you make a change to this? Do you see that there's a system change necessary? And if so, what influence would you bring to bear?
Give an incentive to each department so that they don't have to waste the money in February and March, ready for the next tax year. They will get the next budget the same, or bring in a zero budget so that everything they need is paid for without the need to waste the money. In the moment, the wastage is phenomenal.
Give me an example of that. You make that statement, so what makes you say it?
Well, as with the Slough road, it was a complete waste of money, in so much as it didn't need to be done now. Mm. It could have waited. The prom needs to be done, yet that's not being done. So that the money would have been better spent there, right, in my view.
Well, apart from the money, on your manifesto, Anne, one of the things you say is that you're accusing government of a lack of decision-making. Now, are you thinking of in finance there, or lack of making decisions to do with the infrastructure, or what?
Just generally in Tynwald, I think the last year they've shelved an awful lot of things that could have been addressed. I mean, maybe that's just because in the last year of any government they've come a little redundant. They made a little bit of effort in the last Tynwald to try and get some decisions made or implement some strategies for the way forward. But I just don't think there's been any, certainly in the last 12 months, any clear positive decision making.
Well, decision making then, Chris, I mean, you've now had a term in the House. Do you find getting decisions made difficult?
In the last 12 months, in the last 24 months, I'd say Tynwald has been better than it was in the first 16 months, and government's been better. And the reason I say that is it took 16 months for government to get to its policy programme for the last administration. We didn't have the agenda for change until January 2013. This time, we need to have a programme for government in place by the February 2017 budget. We need an indicative legislative programme. We need that coordinated with finance, and we need that coordinated with policy. And Tynwald needs to have approved it, and the public needs to accept it, so there's a clear mandate.
By what date would that happen?
I think before the before the Chief Minister is elected, I would like to think that the Chief Ministers have put down a sketch of what they want, and I would like to think that the Council of Ministers is actually formed so that there are not troubles about collective responsibility, because the people who are inside government and the departmental member in each department that supported them is actually collectively signed up to recognise the substantial issues that have been identified quite rightly by Mr. Falk. In the right way. I've got to pick up Mr. Buchholz, first of all. I mean, it's all great talking about 24 people having big egos, but Mr. Falk sounds like he believes the job of a politician is actually to go in there and manage the change, and that's not right. It seems to me, to go back to your original question, Mr. Watterson, politician's job is to give firm policy direction to civil servants, to public servants, so that they can go about doing their job properly. And I would say one of the issues has been in the last 5 years that too many decisions in planning and economic development and social care and health have been too politicised.
By politicised, do you mean with the opinion of the minister or the individual, or by outside influence brought to bear on them by their constituents or groups with outside?
By both. I think the politicians have got to earn the respect of the public servants, and the public servants have got to protect the ministers in the right way and also guide the ministers in the right way. Obviously, politicians lead policy. Politicians make sure policy is going in the right direction, make sure government resources, which are public resources at the end of the day, are spent properly. But it's not the job of the politician to go in there and sacking a whole new bunch of public servants or bringing in a whole new bunch. That's not the right way to look at it.
I partly agree with that. I mean, I don't think anybody's proposing doing that. That would be far too radical, the step. But equally, I think the big difference between a politician and a civil servant, you can sack your politician very easily. And that's why decision making, yes, it will be made with the civil servants, but the minister must carry the can for decisions. And if it's a bad decision, it's the minister who must fall on his sword. And that's why politicians must provide clear leadership, and they must make the final decision.
Agreed.
I mean, can I say something? If Alan Bell made a statement not too long ago, and he was saying that his biggest failure in his government was that they could not control or cooperate with the departments in the way how he thought they should cooperate. So this is, I completely disagree with Chris Thomas. So if you are in government, you have to work together with the departments. You do not have to try to impose decisions on them. That is not the way how you encourage people. We have a very low morale in the public departments. We have people who are very disillusioned, or what's the right word, I think, disillusioned. And we have people who are very frustrated when it comes to a certain level in those departments of management. So the frontline services, and I think the majority of the public servants, are very dedicated people. They are very competent, and these are the people who need the protection. And these are also the people who need to be encouraged to work for the minister. What I have heard is that from the minister, and this is, I think you're right with that one, most of the ministers we have seen in the last administration were completely not qualified to lead those departments or have any influence on the head of the departments. And this is why the department leaders were protecting their departments with the silo mentality. That has to be cracked open. The departments are not even talking to each other, and that's what they're also complaining about. You have to have a complete change of culture, and you can only do this when you have been involved in management processes. If you have been not involved in that one, you will have great difficulties in doing that.
Well, I think most people go into Tynwald in the early days with a view of doing something, and then after a period of time they realise that it's impossible to do anything on your own in the current system. You have to do it as a corporate or a cooperation. Exactly. With other members. So what would you do, Sarah? I mean, if you go in and there you are with an opinion of your own, how would you set about rallying people to your cause?
Well, working in Douglas Corporation or being a councillor, we had the same views 8 years ago when I first went in. I thought I could change the world, until you get there. And then you find that you're not on a committee that you wanted to change the world bits in. So you do need to work with your fellow MHKs. And I think that there's been quite a few personal issues between the MHKs that we have had. And they're all fighting for the same, you know, against each other. So I think first thing is sort of team building. Going back to the management thing.
But isn't that going to always happen, Anne? You bring together in a parliament effectively by nature of the animal, by the nature that you seek the job, you're bringing together a bunch of extroverts. That is a formula for argument and problem anyway, isn't it?
It is, but that's a good thing, really. That's why we We have independence. It's, we all have a different point of view, but it's about negotiation, compromise, having to concede a little sometimes to get a little.
Right.
You know, sometimes half a loaf is better than no bread.
Mm. Well, you've been in there for a while, Chris. Have you found that you've had to rethink the way you went about things?
A question helps you put into the open some information that needs to be put into the open. Sometimes it even helps public servants think that and get permission to actually collect that information. Then you need to move something in Tynwald, like something about population or something about public revenue and how it's collected. And I agree completely with Mr. Buchholz that it's been collected wrongly. The middle has been squeezed and poorer people have suffered. So you need to actually work with colleagues to get 17 people in Tynwald to actually vote for something. And the first example that we'll have to change is the election of the Chief Minister.
Yes,
this time there's not an obvious candidate for Chief Minister. With the ingenious solution, I've got to thank the Mr. Speaker for those words, we now have a two-stage process whereby the House of Keys decision on the Chief Minister will be known before the Legislative Council vote on the Chief Minister. And I really do hope that those 2 weeks, the publication of the manifestos, help us all to come together around identified priorities for the general public, and we really do have a solid programme for government to tackle all the issues raised by everybody around this table.
I would say, Chris, though, by splitting the House of Keys and LegCo to vote, the vote is known from the House of Keys. Does that not leave it open to being overturned?
Yep,
and rather than all voting together when nobody knows what anyone else is doing, you're actually providing
this argument,
information.
This argument was made during the debate. Sadly, the Chief Minister, Mr. Bell, repeated it afterwards, although he had actually voted for my motion and spoken before it during the debate, which I thought was very strange. But anyhow, it could do. But if that happens, just think how that will reverberate around Canada and Australia and all the other countries that use the Westminster model. We are practically the only country on earth that gives indirectly elected members a role in the election of the Chief Minister. We've got the most ancient parliament in Tynwald in the Commonwealth, and we're proud of our democracy. And I think the Legislative Council will understand that they need to cast their votes in line with the mandate that's just been received by the 24 members.
So there's one thing, only one minor thing I disagree with you on, Chris, and that is that there aren't some obvious candidates for Chief Minister. I think there are two or three obvious candidates for Chief Minister, and may God help us if they get it.
I must go to a break now. But before we do that, let me just ask you one question. Michelle, then, we've talked about the Tynwald and the House of Keys electing the Chief Minister. But what about the public electing a Chief Minister? Would you agree that that should be done at election time?
I do, actually, yes. I think if everybody puts their manifesto out good enough and sells themselves good enough, the public should have that vote.
Would
be best placed to do that.
At the last election, one or two candidates announced they perhaps might like to be Chief Minister. It didn't knock them off the perch, but it certainly didn't do their electoral performance too good. Everybody thought they were too big for their boots.
It can do, but then if you don't announce it and the public just have that vote anyway from all of the candidates on offer, then at least that's a democratic choice.
Right. Well, at this point in our discussion, we'll now take a commercial break and return with more from Douglas Central in 3 minutes.
Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
Today's Manx Radio 2016 election debate features the constituency of Douglas Central and the six candidates contesting the two seats. With me are Chris Thomas, Michelle Inglis, Sarah Hackman, Richard Falk, Anne Corlett and Kirk Buchholz. Well, we've been talking quite a bit about the structure of government and some of the finances of government, but of course a member of the House of Keys has a strange job, really, because not only is he a national politician and has to deal with all the issues of the nation, but he's got to get down to very grassroots things as well in his constituency. And John Moss referred very briefly there, but I think probably very accurately, to the issue of parking in Douglas Central. I'm sure all on the way round you've found remarks to this effect. But Michelle, you said in your manifesto that you thought we should have parking outside our homes.
I think we should change the parking permits to a residence only. That way at least you can get parked outside your home. If you go out to the shops during the day, if you have a day off work, you can come back and park outside your home instead of walking 20 streets away to park.
Doesn't that apply after 6 o'clock?
It does. but not during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So from 9 till 6, anybody can park there on a permit.
But we have got an area where a lot of houses, a lot of Victorian houses are in the area, and a lot of them are in flats now as well, and each of the premises are allowed to have two parking permits. Ma'am, what would you do about it, eh?
Well, I'm not in agreement with Michelle there. I think, actually, the daytime is not the problem. Having walked around the streets, the parking in the residential areas is good in the daytime. It's in the evening that the problem is caused. And I know we've had issues about whether we should charge for a permit. I don't agree with that either, because I don't believe you could be guaranteed a space outside your own house, or even in the area in some areas.
Hmm. Would you think each house should have a space dedicated
to
it?
No, I don't.
No?
No.
I think there's really no solution for the centre of Douglas, because we have narrow roads, the town is completely overbuilt, and there's no empty space anywhere where you can create car park spaces. But what I can say is, in a number of areas, people wanted to create car park spaces on their property, so they wanted to build a drive, and the biggest economy stopper that we have, the planning department on the Isle of Man, they have rejected those, even though each of the houses would have created two car park spaces, and they would have invested in the economy to let people build those car park spaces. So you can see there's a lack of understanding, a bit of stupidity, and there's no real solution. We can make a big car park somewhere, but that's not a solution. Or underground car park is also not a solution. So there is no solution for parking.
Right. Anybody else have a view on that?
Yes, I think Kurt's absolutely right. This is not a problem with an obvious solution. There are simply too many cars on the island. Mm. There's no solution to that. The solution they adopted in Bermuda, which was even more choked with cars, was to change the law. It was got one car per household. But I can assure you that would be a lot more unpopular than being unable to find a parking space.
Right. Right, now let's just have a look at one or two of the other issues that have been cropping up on our horizon during the thing. Of course, we have to look at the future relationship of the Isle of Man outside the Isle of Man. And Kurt, you were saying that you think there should be access to the European market. We should have an absolutely separate agreement with the European market. How would we go about that?
No, I said we should try to negotiate a separate agreement depending on the outcome of the possible Brexit. We do not know what is happening. We do not know will the Brexit happen and in under which conditions. When Ellen Bell made a presentation to us, which was saying nothing basically, he was only saying we don't know what we are doing, but we have a team of people working on it. Quite interesting, that statement. So I think we have to wait what is Brexit is going to be, and the way how we have to do this, and I'm very determined about this, we have to have a person on the table where in Westminster where the negotiation takes place. We will not have any voting rights, but we have to have somebody there, and that person should advise us what is going to happen so that we can prepare ourselves at the time when we know what the changes will be and adapt our laws or our regulations. So until that happens, we can talk to other countries, we can talk possibly to the European Union as well, same like Mrs. Sturgeon did that from Scotland. Somebody has to go there, and it should be the Chief Minister and not somebody who's working in a department, and negotiate with these people or see at least is there a chance that we could have in some way some access, maybe through Ireland. That's what I said in my manifesto.
That's an observer status.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah. But you also said you thought we should possibly financially align with others, such as Ireland. Financially align, not just go through the working systems of representation.
No, that's not what I said.
Isn't it?
And that's not what I meant, at least.
Well, I think that's what I picked up. What do you reckon to that, then, Sarah? Do you think that we should be now working on it, or we've got to sit back and wait and see what happens?
Well, I was at the same meeting, and I believe that we are working on it, and that there's a lot of work in the background that we as people and as the public as well didn't actually realise what was happening. And I think the Chief Minister has been in talks. Obviously, you know, he can't continue those talks because he's leaving, but I do think that we are doing what we can in the fact that we don't actually know what's happening, but I think we are actually looking at what's going to happen in the future.
What do you think will happen in the future, Chris? I mean, the change in this whole status is going to change a whole series of regulations and a whole series of circumstances, including that of immigration.
That's the point I made in the emergency debate. We've got to look at the people issues in this, as well as tax and as well as access for goods and services. Currently, the Isle of Man government has told the United Kingdom negotiate for the status quo before the Brexit referendum. That might not be possible because that status quo was developed a long time ago when the Isle of Man was very different. So I think it's now time to actually take out of the drawer from 2 decades ago our whole policy on autonomy and external relationships, and we should test that practically historic policy and actually look now to see what our comparative advantage is and actually make sure the UK knows what we perceive as our comparative advantage and encourage them to negotiate with us knowing about what they hear straight away. And we should do whatever we can without embarrassing the UK on the international stage. Well, we have to remember, though, we are a small, continentally peripheral island, and we don't get what we want if we go out being loud about it. The best thing for the Isle of Man to do is often to
Yet when the original Protocol 3 was negotiated, the Isle of Man had its own Deemster actually on the team. He did most of the negotiations for not just the Isle of Man but the Channel Islands. So it is possible even then to play a major part.
Excellent.
And we have to bear in mind Brexit is a process, it's not a single outcome, it's a process with a range of outcomes. The UK could opt for anything from a Norway-style model, in which case it's nominally outside the EU, but it's within the single market, it has free movement of people, and it pays into the market. Anything from that through to a hard Brexit, in which case it would be completely outside the EU, it would end freedom of movement, freedom of goods. And it would trade on World Trade Organization rules. Now, if the latter happened, Protocol 3 would pass into history and we would need to look at negotiating our own relationship. But this does come back to money. Whilst we are in a position where it is possible for us to run out of money, we could go bankrupt, we cannot review our constitutional position with regard to the UK. We may need them to bail us out, though I think that would be a terrible outcome for the island. Once we are financially stable, we might wish to consider whether we would be better having a closer relationship with Europe and a looser relationship with the United Kingdom. We're perfectly entitled to do that. And I think if you consider that the OECD has been generally fair in its treatment of us as an offshore jurisdiction, it immediately whitelisted us. We were one of the first 12 jurisdictions to be whitelisted. The threats against us, the hue and cry against tax havens, has in fact come from the UK, particularly from the last two leaders of the Labour Party. We had some ugly threats from Ed Miliband and some uglier threats from Jeremy Corbyn, who's talked about imposing direct rule. Now, I think at the moment the likelihood of a Corbyn government is very low, but it's by no means impossible. We may need to be very careful here, and when we're financially stable, we might want to lessen our ties with the UK.
So what do you see it then, as a threat or an opportunity, Kurt?
What, the Brexit? I think at the moment, because nobody knows what the outcome would be of a possible Brexit and if this will happen at all. But one thing we all know is that the economical ties between the European Union and the UK are so close, they will not be cut. Under no circumstances they will be cut. So there will be some kind of agreement. The big businesses on both sides, the car manufacturers in Germany, who own, I think, nearly all of the car manufacturers in the UK, they have a big interest that that market will be accessible. The UK has an interest to have, I think, 40% of their export to the European Union. They want to secure that. And in the end, in Germany, I can tell you, and in the UK, the business will tell the politicians what should happen. And they will have to follow, because otherwise the people will vote against them.
Right. Well, if you did that, how would you see, Sarah, this? We're now going into a new situation where the previous arrangement was had to be open, effectively for trade, open borders. We had to have no restrictions on the movement of people and goods. Do you see us bringing in new restrictions for ourselves as this progresses, perhaps changing the work permit system and the residency right?
Well, I sort of agree with Richard, really. To say that we could, well, not go it alone, but we could start leaving the UK behind. And I believe that we do have an opportunity here. But I think we will have to have some sort of restriction on people, but perhaps go for the Australian system rather than the work permit system, because we do still need the skills. So we can't just cut ourselves off.
What do you make of the work permit system, Michelle? Do you think it works?
It doesn't. I think sometimes it's abused slightly. There are Manx workers here that are perfectly suitable for jobs, but they go and get a work permit for somebody who really could be replaced by a Manx worker. So that there is abuse of it to some extent, but I think it does, when it works well, and we do get the skills we need on that work permit basis. But we have relaxed it for the likes of nurses and teachers, I think it's teachers as well, so that we can bring those in without any restrictions on them. And I think in that respect, we do need to do that with maybe some other skilled workers.
Well, the current, the criteria at the moment to obtain a work permit or to apply for one can be a little bit variable at times. How would you react to a point system?
The point system is a very good system, but again, it will be open to abuse just as the same as the work permit is. And I don't know how people would react to having to do that, because it is quite a laborious system trying to go through a point system such as Australia
right,
has.
Now, we've been talking about various political things, but there's a whole core of our society, a whole section of our society, at least a third of it, are all in young people. And we hear a cry these days that there are simply insufficient facilities for young people in the island. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would. I think the Isle of Man is a magical place if you're a child. We've got steam trains, we've got horse trams, it's almost fairy tale like. But once you become a teenager, it gets very boring. What I'm glad to have done in this campaign is engage with young people. A couple of young filmmakers contacted me and asked me if they could make a video interview with me and put it on YouTube. And that was a great fun thing for all of us to do. And I hope that they will continue to engage with me after the election. And we can look at what young people want on the island and what we can feasibly do to meet their needs. I think young people are very bored on the island, and I think that is certainly something we need to look at.
But that has always been the case, hasn't it? There's been people talking about things for them to do. If you're not sportively inclined, you don't want to go and play football or something, then there's not a lot to do.
It is. There's a sort of, they're almost like, to use the TV show title, they're the in-betweeners. They're too big to want to go on the steam train and the horse tram with mum and dad, and they're too small to go to the pub. We need to think what they would actually like to do in their leisure time in between and try to meet those needs.
Richard, can I say something? I think this is exactly the point. The people who make the policy on the Isle of Man, this old boy club in the government, they make decisions what is good for the young people, and they allocate funds for that one. So when you think what they are suggesting is sports that they have done maybe 50 years ago, and this kind of things are not attractive anymore. So the young generation has complete different interests, and we need, I'm also an old person with 60 being 62 years old, but you have to understand what the interest of young people is. It is IT, it has something to do with computers, with tablets, all these kind of things, and that is what we have to support, that the actual interest of the young generation
absolutely
will be supported in the school and in their free time.
And entertainment, surely.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah, that one as well.
Because they still like films. I know you can have watch a film from a tablet, but it's not as entertaining as watching the
I think we have to engage with them to find out actually what.
Nobles Park is quite good with all these things.
Well, I have a teenager, or an almost teenager, and she wants a multiplex cinema and roller rinks and ice rinks.
Bowling,
yes.
In Douglas,
yes.
We're talking money here, though. Mm.
Discotheques where they can go and meet up with their friends indoors without alcohol. They don't need to have the alcohol. It'll get them off that. But not just sitting, riding a bike around the NSC track. They want to actually engage with friends on activities.
Well, they need a safe space where they can do that.
They do, yes.
In the dry, not out in all weathers.
Yes.
And we need to provide that.
Yeah, and talking money is also... Talking money means we have to invest money into the young generation, because the old generation expects the young generation to be paying their pensions.
Absolutely.
So we have to give them the chance to have a good future as well, and a good use. And if we don't provide this, then I think the old people in the parliament do not deserve to get a pension from this, paid by the young people.
Right. Well, there is a series of debates have been going on about taxation. Taxation, to a great extent, very low taxation, is, of course, our sacred cow. But we have all sorts of organisations in the Isle of Man, from the large chain companies and multiples, who there's been a great deal of unease about the level of tax they pay. But you focused more than once, Chris, on monopoly profit. Now, what was that all about?
We have natural monopolies because of the way that certain products are delivered into our market. So, for instance, it seems that in organising freight and other types of shipping to the island, whenever we've had competition, it's been to the detriment eventually. So I've always said what we need is competition for the market in a proper tender rather than competition in the market. We can't have competition in gas, for instance, because it would just be uneconomic to actually get gas pipes, more than one gas pipe, going into each person's house. So what we basically have to do is we have to come up with a suitable economic regulation system. And I said earlier that the last government began processes in many areas quite well in the last 2 years. And one of them is that we do have legislation scheduled. Just before the break, I actually got leave to introduce a private member's bill to tackle the regulation of this type of entity. So what I'm saying is for telephones, electricity, gas, freight, other types of transport, we do need regulation to make sure that only a reasonable return on capital employed is secured.
Well, unfortunately, I'm going to have to ask the last word, I think, from Richard there, who was indicating he wants to say something, because we're very close to the end of the programme now.
I broadly agree with Chris on that. Where I would disagree is I think we could have competition in gas and electricity. There could be some level of shared infrastructure. This is how competition was introduced in the UK. You have one company owns the infrastructure and they make a termination charge to their competitor and the regulator sets the termination charge.
Right. Well, I'm just going to... Sorry, I really am going to have to wrap it up. I was going to ask all of you to tell me very quickly why vote for you, but I'm afraid we're coming right at the very end of the programme and I'm going to have to... We've talked on quite a bit. So, if I may just say that our studio guests here today, as we approach the end of the programme, is... I was going to ask you why the people in Douglas Central... Right? Okay, I've just got time. I was going to say, as we approach the end now, can I ask you very quickly, like 10 seconds, why they should invest a vote in you, Michelle?
Because I would be a voice in Tynwald and I would stand up for your rights.
Chris Thomas?
Track record. We have to understand where we are to know how we go forward in the right way. So, for instance, Manx Gas owns the last bit of the gas supply line, so we can't just imagine it doesn't.
Chris Thomas? I've asked Chris, sorry, Sarah.
I'll always listen to the person on the street and understand what the country needs on every level and will hold regular surgeries.
Right. And Richard Falk?
The Isle of Man government could genuinely be going bankrupt. It is literally a case of vote Falk or bust.
And call it?
I won't shirk responsibility. I bring a common sense approach. Life on our island is good for many, but it could be better, so let's make it better.
Right, and Kurt Buchholz.
Yeah, I think the island has a good future, and I think what we need is experienced and competent politicians to lead us into the right direction.
Right, well, there we end today's programme, in which we met the six candidates for Douglas Central in the forthcoming Keys general election. Now, Douglas East will be featured at the same time tomorrow with Beth Espy in the chair, and I'm Roger Watterson. Until Friday, goodbye.